Good evening. Welcome to the Conventional Sniper Podcast. My name is Justin Clayton. I'm your host. Tonight's going to be episode one of a mini-series that I've decided to do called Through the Sniper Scope. And the intent is of this podcast to give you a first-hand account of real sniper situations in wartime. It'll be an historic look that you should think about as I'm reading this. And all this is from a book. These are true life stories. I want you to think about this and put yourself in the situation as if you were a real sniper. What would you do in this situation? And eventually, through the book, you'll learn what the sniper did at that time. But think about this. What would you do in these situations? And there's something to know about these situations. And these are that a sniper is not a ruthless killer. They're not a common soldier. They're specifically trained to understand the big picture, the intelligence gathering, the application of precision fires on key targets and targets of opportunity. Every bullet that a sniper sends downrange towards a target is intended to save lives. Yes, it may be by the killing of killing of someone or taking their life, but the intent is to save others' lives. Every shot that is taken is to save specifically friendly lives or innocent bystanders. And you have to understand that snipers are 95% of the time reactive to situations. There's usually a rule of engagement. There's usually a specific thing that a sniper is looking for. Someone that has caused harm to other people, whether it be friendlies or a local population. So the book is called A Sniper on the Eastern Front. And it is a memoir of a German Wehrmacht sniper in World War II, in August of 1944. The Germans are in full retreat back towards Germany, the Russians in tow. The Romanians are thinking about switching sides. And they eventually do, and this is where we get to the point where they begin to switch sides. Now, in this particular situation, the sniper, his name is Sepp, S-E-P-P, he is going to meet some friends to go see some Romanian soldiers to have some wine and just interact with the locals, so to speak, right? And he arrives a little late to the party. And now, one rule that snipers always learn, it's the first thing you learn at sniper school, that as a sniper, you should always assume that you're being watched. If the enemy can see you, you can see the enemy. If you can see the enemy can see you. So we're going to fast forward to a little bit where he's noticed some commotion up ahead while he's going to meet his friends and the Romanians at a different location. He hears some noise and he catches up to whatever these noises are. He brings up his binoculars. Now we're going to go to the book. Through my binoculars, there are five infantry, one of whom was Lewis. At the end of the woodland path, about 100 meters away, surrounded by Romanians and two Russians. The Germans were bound and about to be interrogated. For this purpose, there was a Romanian interpreter who relayed the questions of the Russians to the German prisoners. The answers were apparently unsatisfactory, for one of the Soviets pushed the interpreter's side and began to jab the infantryman's face with a rifle butt. A group of Romanians were standing around the scene, and I could see by their expressions they did not approve. Next, a Romanian officer appeared and remonstrated with his men. This had no apparent effect until he drew a pistol, which motivated the NCOs in the group to drive the remainder back to their positions. The officer then appeared to suggest to the inquisitors that they should conduct the proceedings in a less exposed area. At the foot of the slope to the right of my hiding place was the latrine block, and the prisoners were led behind the weather-boarded rear wall out of sight of the compound, which was better for me. The distance was now about 80 meters. The five German prisoners were in the hands of two Russians and two Romanians, plus the interpreter. The captors decided to concentrate on Lewis, and after a few violent kicks, punches, and more jabs with the rifle butt, he collapsed to the ground. They untied his wrists, dragged him to the latrine wall, spread his left hand on a ledge. The Russian leader withdrew a pistol from his holster and smashed the stock down on Lewis's outstretched fingertips. Lewis screamed in a mixture of rage and pain. I felt a wild urge to take action, but suppressed it. I had to wait for the right moment. A hasty reaction could be fatal for us all, and in any case, I had to report the situation regarding the Romanians to battalion headquarters. I could not do this if I was dead or captured. Therefore, I bided my time and considered feverishly how best to help my five colleagues, hoping that the other side would see sense and simply tempt them off as prisoners of war. In order to silence his cries, Lewis was gagged. His suffering was obviously the example to the others to reveal whatever it was that the Inquisitors wished to know. Despite the encouragement of beatings, they failed to provide the required information, and so the fingertips of Lewis's right hand received the same treatment as the left. As he withered in agony, the questioning of the other four was resumed. I had prepared a rest for the barrel of my rifle and positioned it to my satisfaction. As I watched the Soviet torturer rip open Lewis's tunic and trousers, take out a pocket knife, open it, and then wave it threateningly in the faces of the four kneeling German soldiers. After some shouting and yelling, the Romanian interpreter shrugged his shoulders in resignation. At this, the Russian bent down to Lewis, split open his abdomen, and through the wound brought out about a meter's length of intestine. Lewis's scream of pains were audible despite the gag. I had seen many terrible sights in this war, but this was the worst to date, and it had gone far enough. The situation was too much for the Romanian interpreter, for he drew his pistol and put Lewis out of his suffering with two quick shots to the head. At this, a shouting match broke out at the latrine between the Russians and the Romanians. Both Russians drew their pistols. The four German survivors, hands bound behind their backs, looked on, eyes large in panic, from their enforced kneeling position. The Russian torturer threatened the Romanian interpreter with his pistol, then aimed it at the nearest German prisoner and shot him in the face. The lifeless body remained kneeling upright for a few minutes before toppling sideways. The important thing for a sniper in such a situation is to control his emotions. The two Russians had to be killed, not in rage, but professionally. I took the first Russian in my sights, held my breath, concentrated calmly, took a pressure on the trigger, and pulled smoothly. The bullet tore through the chest of the target and threw him backwards like a rag doll. The second looked around in surprise. His face came into my sights, and I fired. Two dead. The main job was completed. The Romanian interpreter had quickly sized up the problem and cleared the chest-high latrine wall like an Olympic high jumper, his fall broken by the trench of semi-solids on the far side. Instead of taking cover, the other two Romanians fired off wild machine gun bursts towards the woods, nowhere near me and presented no danger. My third shot catapulted one of them against the latrine wall. By now, the compound was an uproar. Covered in feces from head to toe, the interpreter was running from the foul trench into which he had fallen. A machine gun gave him covering fire, the projectiles whistling too close for comfort. I could do nothing further for the surviving three infantrymen. It was my duty to raise the alarm. Like a ghost, I vanished into the forest, avoiding the pathways and moving along the bushes. So just imagine for a second that you're there, going to hang out with your buddies. And you come across your buddies literally getting interrogated, and you watch your buddy Lewis, who you've spent the past 2 or 3 years with in combat with, moving all across the Eastern Front, forwards and backwards, against the Russians and seeing harsh, harsh things. And we'll get to some of those things in a later podcast. But think of yourself, what would you do in that situation? How would you use your training to your advantage, to your friend's advantage, to your battalion's advantage? Think about the overall picture. Did Lewis have to die? Did he have to have his guts carved out? Could you have taken a shot and killed that Russian before he carved him up? Or is it necessary to let the situation develop, figure out the intent of the Russians and what was going on, and get that information back to headquarters to save thousands more lives? Is that information really worth it? That's what you have to think about as a sniper. And how does this apply to some of the conventional world you may think of, or just being a hunter? A lot of it has to do with target detection. He's walking through the woods, assuming that he's being observed. No different than when you're hunting and you're looking for a deer or an elk or a moose. You should always assume that the deer, elk, or moose have observed you before you've observed them. You must be understanding of the situation. The rifle must be at the ready, on safe, and you must be aware of your situation and your surroundings. So I appreciate your time tonight. That is the end of episode 1 through the sniper scope. If you have any feedback, if you'd like to hear more episodes, please like, subscribe, follow along. We'll be doing more of these episodes. This is just one situation, one little instance. Think about it. As always, from the tall grass, one shot, one kill. Have a good night.